From the Spec Network, this is Fragmented, an Android developer podcast where we talk about building good software and becoming better Android developers. I'm Don Felker.
And I'm Kaushik Gopal.
Welcome to the show.
You know what sucks? Waiting. Life is just too short to be waiting and waiting. If you're an Android developer and you need to run lint checks, unit tests, UI tests, check to see that the build doesn't fail because of a commit that you made. After every single commit, just think about it. You could run it on your local and then wait. But as we've established, waiting sucks. Well, Microsoft has a service called App Center that they'd like to promote and help us in this waiting problem. The whole point of using App Center is to automate my Android development lifecycle. So what does this mean? That means every time I commit my code to GitHub, I can just power on with my next feature, you know, go live my life, breaking things occasionally. And App Center will make sure that I, you know, don't go too crazy. In the background, it pulls the code from GitHub, runs the Gradle build, runs my unit tests, runs the UI tests, does this all without having to make me wait on my local machine. But App Center does more, though. It's a fully modular suite of services, so you can pick and choose the service that you need, and you can connect it to the tools that you already use. They have crash reporting, analytics, push services, a test device lab of their own, and you can selectively pick just the ones that you want. I particularly like the test device lab. They have some of the most common Android devices that you'll find in the market. So, you know, the Samsung devices that we all know are pretty prevalent and need to test our apps on, but don't like to own personally. Well, they have the Samsung devices up there. It's exactly what you would expect. They run screenshots on every test. It's amazing. If you're looking for a CI service, I highly, highly recommend them. You'll get a host of other services to boot along with it. And the best way to do it is to just try. Head on over to appcenter.ms. My thanks again to Microsoft and to App Center for sponsoring today's show.
For the longest time, we've been wanting to talk about a topic, GraphQL. It's a topic that we've found interesting, but haven't gotten the chance to really talk about it until now. Friend and GDE, Mike Nakimovich, created the library Apollo, which is the de facto official GraphQL client for Android. In this first part of a two-part series, we take a step back and first try to understand the fundamentals of GraphQL. What it is, why one would use it, how Mike set out to create and contribute Apollo for Android, and his whole journey and satisfaction in open sourcing it. It's a really interesting episode where Mike talks about his time at New York Times and how the need for something like this came in. If you've ever been interested in GraphQL, then this is a great show to get you up to speed. So here's part one.
Kaushik, you're back from Google I.O.
I am. I managed to catch a cold or something, so I may sound an octave or two lower. But yes, it's good to be back. Life has resumed.
I.O. is one of those places where you can go in the middle of the day and you'll be sweating, and then as the sun sets, you'll be absolutely freezing. Like, the temperature swings are so crazy there.
Yeah, I guess the Californians are sort of used to it, which is why it's all, you know, you got to layer up everywhere you go. It isn't all snow or all blazing sun. So.
Exactly like that. So I'm glad that you're back. It's been a while since we've been on a call together, so I'm really glad that we can record another podcast here today and grateful for everyone here that's listening with us. So thank you, listeners. So what are we going to talk about today?
So there's this topic that's been on our radar for quite some time, and it's about this concept that came out called GraphQL, right? Mm-hmm. And GraphQL is super interesting, and I know both of you, both you and I have chatted about this some time back, but we've never actually done a deep dive, and a couple of listeners have requested this. Mm-hmm. But we managed to find someone who could help us out in diving into this topic, so today, we should probably do that.
Yeah, without further ado, we'd like to welcome Mike to the show. Welcome to the show, Mike.
Hi, thanks so much. Happy to be here.
Mike, for folks that aren't familiar with who you are and they've seen your name here on the podcast player where they're listening right now, can you give them a brief rundown of kind of who you are, what you do, where you work, and so forth? Now, Kaushik and I, of course, know you through the GDE program and the community and so forth, but if you give everyone else a nice introduction, it would be fantastic so we can be on a common ground.
Yeah, absolutely. So like Don said, I'm a GDE. I've been an Android GDE for about a year, and I was recently minted as a Kotlin GDE as well.
Woo-hoo.
Nice.
That's congrats.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. I'm the lead Android engineer at Nike's S23 NYC studio in New York, where we try to make a lot of innovative experiences like AR and physical space things, not just apps. And I'm also the co-founder of Friendly Robot NYC, a small consultancy that me and a friend of mine, Brian Plummer, run. But most importantly, I consider myself an open source fanboy. And it's something that has skyrocketed my career and my happiness level, just being able to be involved with open source.
Can you talk a little about your open source experience? It sounds like that's something interesting that maybe our listeners might be interested in too. Like,
yeah.
How did you get started? Like, what was the thing that got you into open source? And, you know, what do you find so rewarding about it?
Yeah, why are you so passionate about it?
Sure. So I started my career as a .NET developer. And this was at a small company in Jersey where we started running into problems. We started running into problems where we had bugs and we found bugs in the .NET framework. And some of those bugs were just marked as won't fix. And that was troubling to me. We didn't have the code. Yeah, we didn't know what to do at that point. And it really made me want to go back to Java, which is what I always used growing up and what I studied in college. So working as a Java developer at a party rental company, actually, we eventually needed to start doing Android, and we started doing Android very similar to what UPS does or Amtrak does, where we had physical scanners on the road that our drivers would use, and Android was just a natural fit for it. So Android inherently was open source. It really made me excited to be working in a platform where I can see the code, the implementation that I'm running on top of. And I can see that people actually forked it. There were multiple permutations of Android, and that just made me fall in love with it. And I started noticing that not only Android, the framework, is open source, but all of the recommendations of libraries that we should be using were open source. There were things like Retrofit, things like RxJava. And it really, it got me addicted. It felt like cheating to me, where other people were doing my work. I didn't have to learn how to load images correctly. Picasso just did it for me. And it gave me this good feeling that I can start using things externally that I didn't write. And eventually I wanted to start contributing to that. So I started reviewing code or opening bugs. And that led to a small open source library, Tiny Dancer, that I wrote with Brian Plummer. And from that and our learning experiences, we're able to leverage it at the New York Times and start open sourcing libraries there as well, or contributing more heavily. And eventually that led to us being a part of Apollo, which is what I would consider the GraphQL standard on Android. And we'll get into that a little bit more.
Very cool, very cool. So maybe we should take a step back and talk about what GraphQL is before we talk about the implementation on Android, right? What exactly is GraphQL? Is it like a database? Is it a protocol? Explain it to me like I'm a complete dummy. Like, what exactly is GraphQL?
Sure. First, it is not a database. Graph databases are a thing, but GraphQL is not related to them at all. GraphQL is more a standard or a spec that was made at Facebook, and it was made as a query language for working with APIs. So GraphQL allows you to do things like querying your backend for just the data that you need. It's a replacement for REST. You can use it instead of REST.
Okay.
Rather than your backend developers having to define this route returns exactly this data, GraphQL instead lets you send the fields that you want, and the backend then fills those fields and returns to you their values.
So there could be a possibility where my database is exactly the same on my backend. I could have, like, you know, a standard Postgres database on my backend, or, like, you know, Oracle or something, some database, a very traditional database. But the mechanism of querying the data could be through GraphQL is basically what I'm hearing. Is that accurate?
Yep, exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you make resolvers for your data. I've worked with GraphQL backends where GraphQL was almost a proxy on top of many RESTful endpoints with a little bit of logic to be able to filter down and get you only the data that you need. But yeah, fundamentally, a GraphQL server will just have resolvers that will know how to resolve the queries that you have. Those resolvers might go to other servers, or those resolvers might go to a local database or a cache that they are maintaining.
I feel like we're going really deep here, and I kind of want to step back and maybe like five steps and ask the question of, So we have, like, I can query an API, but I guess my question right now is, like, kind of why do I need GraphQL? Let's say I already have a REST API. I'm getting the data that I need. I've built my Android application. Why would I want to look at something like GraphQL, and what's maybe the reason for it, or what made you even look into it? Like, I know it's many questions there, but that's kind of what I'm tossing around my head right now. And I know some listeners are probably thinking the same thing.
Sure. Let's go back to my previous job at the New York Times. Mm-hmm. We were heavily committed on REST. We had lots of backend data, as you could imagine, everything from commenting systems to articles to search. And besides having a lot of APIs, we also had a different permutations of clients. So, for example, even on Android, we had Android phone and Android tablet, which needed different feeds and different articles delivered in a different way to them. And eventually, we started having even more permutations because, as you could imagine, the images that you want to display on a high-resolution phone or a low-resolution phone are different. So we kind of got to a point where we were either returning a JSON node within a RESTful response that had 20 different image crops.
Oh, man.
Or we had to send a million different parameters to our backend for exactly what every field needed to be like. So what ended up happening is that we had to stand up this team eventually that all they did was mutate our data and make specific endpoints with parameters for things that our clients needed. And as we had more clients and more languages, it became unwieldy and we needed something a little more dynamic.
And so how did you run across something like GraphQL? What were you looking for at the time to say, like, I mean, did you just hop on Google and say, hey, you know, API with query parameters, filtering APIs, or like, how did you find this and what was it? What did that look like?
We were trying to find something that was more client driven rather than the server implementers having to tell us what data returns. We as client developers, as we're prototyping something new, should be able to drive what data is being returned to us. It came from us having very long development cycles when we were waiting for the server to update and expose endpoints that are slightly different from other ones. Mm-hmm. And if once we started searching for it and searching for some kind of domain specific or something that is more driven by whatever the clients are, GraphQL kept coming up as the solution to our problems.
Okay.
Interesting. So what you're saying is the same Android client, say you have a screen on, you know, the app called the newsfeed or something, right? Like, you know, the New York Times newsfeed or whatever the landing page is. The same, you're saying, like, if you are on an Android client versus an iOS client versus like mobile web or some other thing, the same feature or the same screen would require data to be presented in a slightly different fashion depending on the client, and you didn't want to necessarily be married to the same REST endpoint. You wanted that to be adapted in some form, I guess, right?
Yeah, precisely. And if there's a certain sections in the homepage that maybe have a title and an image but no body, we can now have more specific responses that don't all have to be so large. So I use Reddit as the other example. Every single Reddit page can be exposed with a .json and you can get the data. But that data is so nested and so huge. I don't know anyone that builds Reddit clients that uses every field that is being returned.
Yeah, true.
When once we started going global and supporting other countries, it became a much bigger concern of how much data we are sending over the wire. So we wanted to make API calls as efficient as possible.
I had a couple of follow-up questions, and this is more about me thinking about how I use REST currently and how it compares to using GraphQL, right? So with my REST endpoints today, I could maybe also just pass in parameters with those fields, like saying, hey, filter this, don't send me this, send me, you know, send me 10 newsfeeds versus 50 newsfeed items, or, you know, something along that line. Why would it, I mean, I guess my point is I could achieve the same thing with REST, right? Or am I missing something? I feel GraphQL provides a little more than just that. So what am I missing there?
Yeah, there's a few things. I consider GraphQL as taking REST up to the current century.
I like that.
There's a predefined schema for one. When you're making REST calls, you're either depending on documentation that could be out of date, or if you're reverse engineering what parameters you can pass. with GraphQL, the server will provide a schema to you.
That's nice.
And there's tooling where you can explore the schema. Check out the GitHub Explorer, which is GitHub's graphical interface where you can start building queries. And as you build queries, it auto-completes and tells you what fields are within each sub-node as you keep going through whatever the structure is. And these are things that didn't really exist for REST. And, you know, you can send all the parameters, but if you're filtering 100 different fields by different things, parameters might not be the right way within a query string for you to tell the server what you need. Eventually, it might make more sense, like GraphQL, to send more of a template. You send a template of what you need, and they fill that template.
Got it. You make some very good points. I guess the idea, like the key points that I hear is like, well, what it can get pretty unwieldy, right? Like at a certain point, assuming I have this endpoint and I want like I need 20 cases of like filters or something, it is achievable through that REST endpoint, but then it becomes very unwieldy. That's one aspect of it. The other is the schema. I think that sounds like, yeah, that sounds very convincing. Where
yeah, and you can validate against that schema on your side to make sure that you're asking for something that the server's going to be able to respond to. There's no surprises of data not available or wrong structure or something else that you can send. You can validate for everything client-side.
Can you talk a little about what you mean by validating the schema client-side?
Sure. So because you have the schema ahead of time that you are querying the backend for, you can write validators that make sure that your query is a valid query for the particular schema.
Oh, got it. So it's almost like testing your endpoints. It's almost like integration testing, but given that if the protocol is followed, if you trust the protocol to work, then you can just write your integration tests.
That's right.
Yeah, right now I'm playing with the GitHub Explorer, and it's pretty amazing because I can type in a value into there that doesn't exist in the schema, and you know, push the run button, then immediately it lets me know, hey, this isn't valid. So I definitely can see the power in that, especially for developing. You know, how many times have you typed something into your application or into, you know, retrofit or whatever, and then misspelled something? And then you're like, you don't know why this is not working. You've typed it correctly, but for some reason you missed a character, and you know, that would get caught a lot earlier.
Yep, exactly. And just a few of the other features, fragments is something that exists in GraphQL.
Fragments?
On resume, on pause?
Oh, a little more useful than those fragments.
Oh, okay. Wow.
Fragments in GraphQL is kind of like partials in HTML, where you can have parts, you can share those parts between different queries so that you can actually have code sharing without having to... there's actual constructs for sharing parts of a query with other queries.
Oh, interesting. And would the idea here basically be, well, I know I need my user object in this, so let's just have a standard user set, like the set of allowable publicly exposed user fields. Say you don't want like you know, sensitive information to leak, then you can just have like this partial or this fragment in GraphQL saying, hey, this is my user fragment, and I can just embed that wherever I need. Is that like the idea?
Yeah, you could embed something like that. But another example that I've seen is, say you have a query that is returning humans, and humans have a weight and a height, and your query is also returning animals that have a weight and height. You can make a weight and height fragment, and even in the same query or in different queries, reuse those fields. So don't think of it as just a node that contains children that you can use. The actual parts of the children are something that you can make fragments out of, which is really useful where multiple parts of your query actually use the same fields and you don't have to redefine those fields multiple times.
Oh, that is so cool. So it's almost like you're reusing the schema portion of the data, not the actual data itself.
Right, exactly. You'll get different data back, but the schema fields will be the same.
Oh, that's really cool. That's pretty cool.
So I see this as something that's interesting. And if it was something I wanted to go try, what would be, I guess I'm kind of thinking and talking at the same time here. I guess I kind of need the GraphQL server to already be set up to start interacting with that. Is that what's the proper steps to kind of get going with GraphQL if that's something that we wanted to work with?
Yeah, so there are some public APIs, like GitHub is one of them. GitHub exposes everything as GraphQL. There's a few practice APIs too. There's a Star Wars API.
Ooh.
Yeah, and I believe Shopify has started exposing their API as a GraphQL API now too.
Oh, very cool, very cool. Maybe we should start stepping into the section where we talk about, okay, let's get into the guts of this and see how, if I wanted to implement this myself or if I wanted to shift to using GraphQL, that's something I would want to do. You mentioned about like this queries that we have to write with GraphQL and send it down. Is that something that's in the client? I mean, what does it look like, just out of curiosity, before we dive into the specifics? Is it like, does it look like SQL style kind of queries, or how does all of that work?
It's a DSL. It's sort of similar to JSON. There's a lot of brackets, but it's just descriptions of what fields you want to get or what objects you want to be returned from the API. So think of it as just keys that are nested inside of objects.
And is that sent in like the request body? When I kind of talk to a GraphQL server, I put that in request body and then it interprets that, or what?
That's right. Everything is a post request in GraphQL, and everything goes to a single endpoint.
Oh, to a single endpoint. Okay, learn something new.
Interesting. So api.github.com is the only URL that you have. So if I think of it in my retrofit world, that's the only endpoint that I'll need, and then everything else is just passed in as parameters.
That's right. Hence, it's dynamic. They can add more data or types of data, and you don't have to add any more endpoints.
Which makes sense now that you talk about it. It's GraphQL. It's a query language. You know, I have an endpoint, and I'm going to provide it a query, and then it's going to return me back whatever I ask. It's kind of like SQL. You go to the SQL client or, you know, SQL command line, whatever you're working in, and you ask it for whatever data from whatever tables you want, and it returns that data. So it seems like that's kind of how I'm drawing that correlation, that there's that single entry point.
Yep, precisely. And it's, besides querying, you could also do mutations. And recently, subscriptions got added to the spec as well. So think of it as WebSockets, where you can subscribe for data and the API can actually push the data to you without you ever having to pull for it.
Oh, wait, that's so cool. So, but I guess the implementation would be through WebSockets or any other sort of WebSocket kind of implementation where there's like two-way channel setup.
That's right. Yep. So there's a few GraphQL server implementations, and WebSockets is the ones that I've seen how they work. So when we worked on Apollo, a GraphQL client for Android, we did it through OKHTP WebSockets.
Very cool. Very cool. I feel there's so much more interesting stuff when we step into the Android world. But before we go there, right? I'm sold on this GraphQL thing. I want to try it out. Is there like a specific set of steps that I need to follow before, like, I can, how do I start to think about GraphQL? Like, I want to start using GraphQL. How do I start to think about this? Are there any specific steps that I have to go through?
To start using GraphQL, you'll need a server that can return things with GraphQL. One that I've used in the past was called Sinatra. It's a Scala server, and the work is done in making resolvers. So you make resolvers that know how to resolve parts of a query, whatever the individual nodes within that query are, and then it brings all that data together and is able to send it back to whatever clients are requesting it. So the first thing that you're going to actually need to do, and this is kind of the hard part, is coming up with a schema. So you need to come up with, think of it as a giant tree of every single part of the data that your server is going to be able to return to. So Firebase works in a kind of a similar way, where you have some top-level nodes, and they have children, and children have children. But here, each one of them has some kind of name, some kind of key, and you can then return whatever the data is that the user needs for those keys.
Can we start with maybe an example to make it clear? So would that, so if I'm trying to think how I would use something similar for, like, you know, for Instacart or something. So I guess, I probably do. Like, for a typical REST response would have like metadata, right? Like, oh, response success, error, blah, 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 like metadata about the response. So that would be one node. Then I would have, user object. Then, like, so user would be the key. And then, like, you know, I could have name, height, weight, whatever some of the examples that you were saying. Then I would have, like, order deliveries or something, or orders. And then in that, I could have, like, items. Is that, all of this would be nested in one giant sort of schema on the back end. Is that how I would go about it?
That's right. And then I can request just parts of that schema. So I can request just items, or I can request users with only certain items, or I can request anything that falls under item. So you can do partial gets to any part of your schema. And the schema will be something that you would give to me, so then I would know what I can query.
So as a client developer, you're receiving the schema from the GraphQL, you know, the server team order saying, hey, here's our schema, here's what all of our data looks like. Then at that point, you can then decide how you want to describe the data that you want back on the client, right?
Yes. So if you that GitHub Explorer mm-hmm. Has a docs on the side, which okay. describes their schema, and you can just jump through all of the nodes and all the children and see what data is there. So that is just a front end for the schema that they have on the GitHub GraphQL server.
So then once I look at my big schema, like you said, I got the whole tree structure or whatever, I can then look at that. And as Kaushik already said, I can kind of say, hey, I want all the orders that have been placed after, you know, last Saturday that are above $1,000 or whatever. And then I will get that, you know, result set back according to the schema. Would that be a correct understanding?
Yeah, it would. And you can actually combine multiple queries together into a single response.
And that's all, again, all within the body of that post, right?
Yes. So I can, it'll all be within the body of the post. But yeah, you can put 2, 3, or 4 queries in there and it'll return all of them to you.
So is that considered just a query or is that considered a mutation or what's the kind of the difference? Because I know there's two different things. There's like a query and a mutation. Like what's the difference here?
Think of a query as a get and a mutation as a post or a patch. It's something that will actually mutate the data on the back end.
So if I wanted to update my first and last name of my profile, that would be a mutation that I'd be making.
Right. So when you ask for a query, you're sending only the keys. When you send a mutation, and it's only the keyword that is up front is different, you will actually have values next to some of the keys within some of the fields within your query. So those would be the one that the server will know to mutate or to write to whatever their store is.
Oh, that makes sense. So that's how you would indicate it. Initially, I thought maybe we might explicitly mark a request from the client being a query or a mutation, but we don't even have to do that. Essentially, if you pass in a value, it indicates that it's a mutation versus just a query.
You still need to mark it as a query or a mutation.
Okay, I guess that makes sense. What happens if I mark it as a query and I pass a value? It's just an invalid sort of request?
Yes, we would, on Apollo and Android, we would validate and not let you even compile.
Very cool, very cool. Okay, that's starting to make a lot of sense. Just a quick follow-up to what you said before. So even in this giant schema that I have, that I've defined now, even I could request even like a nested portion of that schema. Like, for example, say my orders had items and inside items I had replacements or something. I could send a query from my client to only pull just a list of replacements. I mean, this might be a stupid question, but I just want to clarify that.
Sure, sure. Absolutely. And it's actually wrong for me to call it a tree. It's actually a graph of nodes.
Right. Okay. Yeah, okay. Which makes sense. Yeah, yeah.
So the reason that that's important is if you have a user and he has items, the items can actually have a user node under him as well, because graphs can link anything to anything. So a lot of the times I had trouble with REST where I'm nested inside of a third or fourth level of something. And I need the top level information, and there wasn't a good way for me to get it. With GraphQL, there's facilities for you to repeat nodes. You can have cycles, and it's not actually a cycle where you can have things that are at top levels, again, mm-hmm. exposed a few nodes in as a child of something else.
Got it. So it is truly a graph versus a tree, because in a tree, then like the parent is so much more important, I guess, right?
Precisely.
Yeah, but not to go into the computer science things, because trees might be a graph too. But like, I guess the idea is like, yeah, the parent nodes aren't necessarily as important in this case, because they could, the children, so to speak, can exist of their own.
Yep, exactly.
Nice. Just one more question. All of this sounds great, but is there like tooling around this that might help potentially into sort of like doing this for me versus me having to like do this? What are the different tools that exist that allow me to sort of like achieve some of this stuff, right? Like defining the schema, maybe like talking about like some standard way of like writing these queries, mutations. Are there ways that we can actually get to a point where GraphQL is set up for us with good tooling?
I think it's pretty good right now, actually. So GitHub's Explorer is actually a open source project called Graphical, GraphIQL. And that is a front end that allows you to write queries in your browser to validate those queries, to see the results in the server prior to you having to add those queries to your Android app or any other app that you are using. So I consider it much more visual, mm-hmm. where you can explore through this graphical interface what the backend is doing and make sample queries prior to doing your real work.
Oh, interesting. And can I point this to any sort of endpoint, or no, does it usually point to just is it pointing only to like GitHub where you can try it?
It's usually whoever maintains a GraphQL server exposes the GraphIQL on their server as almost like the homepage, as the index page.
Oh, interesting. Okay, that makes sense. All right, folks, hope you enjoyed that episode. That concludes part one, where we've talked about GraphQL and the basics. In the next part that should be coming out in a week, we dive into Apollo specifically and talk about how GraphQL was implemented with a sort of Android-y way, and how Mike specifically put in a lot of thought into making sure that GraphQL for Android worked in a way that was very harmonious for the Android environment. So stay tuned for that next part. Before we wind the show down, I want to take a quick moment and thank Microsoft again for sponsoring today's show. They want to promote App Center. App Center is a continuous integration, delivery, and feedback service for your Android apps. You should check them out if you're looking for a CI solution or a UI testing solution. Head on over to appcenter.ms and spend less time managing your app lifecycle and more time coding. Because in the end, that's what makes us all happy. Thanks again for sponsoring today's show, Microsoft.
That's it for the show, folks. Fragmented is hosted by Don Felker and me, Kaushik Gopal. We edit and produce all the episodes here on Fragmented. Sarah the Amazing Jackson from the Spec Network helps with production assistance and wraps our final mix. Our theme and ad music is by the national recording artist Blueprint from Weightless Recordings. You can find more Fragmented episodes at fragmentedpodcast.com. Thanks for listening, and we will catch you in the next episode.